So the last night of Hanukkah is here, and this is a story called Bechir, King for a Year. And I like it because it's again when all seems lost, when it's as if everything has conspired to trap you in a corner, there is a way out as long as you keep your head and you think clearly and you make informed decisions. I think that's why I like it. Bechir, King for a Year. There was once an oldest son who didn't want to follow his father into the family business of carpentry. He didn't like wood. Who wouldn't like wood? But Bechir didn't. He didn't like the smell of it, the grain of it. Maybe he had an objection to cutting down trees, nobody ever found out. But try as his father might, he could not get him into the family business. And so it was decided that the young man needed to learn a profession. Maybe he would be a scholar, but Bechir could not hold a thing in his head from one day to another. They took him on, they taught him his letters, they taught him Talmud, they taught him so much, but oh, he would find so many ingenious ways to skip classes. There was a silversmith that took him on, but he didn't have the patience for that either. I had an eye for the beauty of it, and profession after profession and apprenticeship after apprenticeship, until one day he decided that the only thing left for him was to go to sea. And he informed his father, and, well, his father, to be honest, was just relieved the lad had found something he wanted to do. And from his mother, as you can imagine, there was much weeping and wailing, gnashing of teeth, and oh that it should come to this. He set sail, and I have to say, he was as bad as this as everything else. He didn't listen to instructions, he was sloppy. You cannot be sloppy on the deck of a ship, hence the term shipshape. Everything must be tidied away, and he was always leaving ropes that his fellow sailors would trip over. He was mishearing commands. Well, truly, none of them liked him on board ship either. And so one day, when there was a great tempestuous storm, and because of a piece of rope that Bechir had not stowed away, he caught his foot on, and with the pitching and tossing of the deck went straight overboard. Well, I'm ashamed to say that his fellow sailors didn't try that hard to find him. So there was Bechir, alone on an endless sea. And he drifted in and out of consciousness, and he clung to debris that he found, until eventually he was washed up by some luck of the gods onto a sandy shore. And as he clawed his way to an upright position, parched, the sun burning, his eyes swollen and salty, as he opened his eyes and tried to look around, he was surprised to see people coming, running towards him. And at first he was afraid, thinking they would do him harm, but none of it. They were smiling and they were laughing. They were putting garlands around his neck, and they put his poor, hungry, salt-stained body onto a beautiful palanquin, a padded chair with fine silk cushions, and he was carried into the city like a king. In fact, that's exactly what he was. For bemused, when he had been washed and clothed and fed, and he asked, who should he speak to thank? They said, no, it is merely the custom of this place. And this is what the people of that place told him. When a man knows he will be king for a lifetime, he gets used to the position. And he becomes all-powerful. So the custom was that they would welcome the next stranger, and he should be crowned king, and he would be king for a year. Well, this was the most wonderful news Bechir had ever heard. He wouldn't have to look for a position. It had been foisted upon him. He wouldn't have to look for a job, and he was very good at being king. He was kind. He was thoughtful. People liked his decisions. And when it finally occurred to him that maybe he should take a wife, a queen, he was informed that there was already a queen that had been left by the previous king. Well, he suggested an audience with the woman, and the queen was brought before him, and well, Bakia, he'd never even courted a girl in his life, and suddenly there he was with a ready-made wife, and she was beautiful, and he didn't know what to say or what to do, and she, with her eyes downcast, just answered his questions about, you know, what she did with her day, and didn't she find it odd, and there was a silence about her that spoke more than any words. And Bakia asked her to tell her story. I don't have time to tell you her whole story here on this night, but suffice it to say, she had ruled as queen for 5 long years. This would be her 6th year, and at the end of it, that would be 7. 5 long years she had ruled, and 5 kings she had seen. Well, Bakia was overcome with sorrow for this woman, that she would have no choice in this position, and so he gave her quarters, and he made no demands on her. Rather, he asked her help in how to run the kingdom for the best, and this is something she had never been asked before. And she warmed to this young man. And the two of them, if truth be told, within 6 months of ruling that kingdom together, it had been the most prosperous, the happiest, that the corn was rich and the bellies full. And well, Bakia was so happy that one day he risked a kiss, on the hand, but a kiss nevertheless. And she did not resist, and she said, "I feel, Bakia, that I could love you the way I have never loved any of my previous husbands, and because of this, I need you to ask the right questions." It was a strange thing to say. Maybe she was governed by some code of silence, he didn't know, but he thought and he pondered, and it was only after 7 days of pondering that he asked, "What has happened to all the other kings?" She smiled and she said, "This indeed, king, is a very wise question, but one that I'm not at liberty to answer. Why don't you ask your vizier? He is paid to inform you of all knowledge, and you are king, you can demand answers." And so King Bakia asked what had happened to all the other kings, and the vizier, who had prospered under the reign of King Bakia, was not inclined to be hesitant with the information. Well, he said, "We find that kings that get used to office rule very unwisely. And while you at this moment are the finest of kings, who is to say that in a year, 2 years, 5, 7, 10, 15, you would not become the most avaricious of men? And so what happens is this. You see, on the horizon there is a small island. At the end of a king's reign, he is rowed out to that island and left, and a new king always seems to arrive. Heavens be praised, a new king is put on the throne. Pray," he said, "am I allowed to go to that island and view it for myself now?" "Oh no," he said, "that is the one thing I cannot do. But I can say this, you will go with only what you arrived in." And so over the days and the months, King Bakia found that on the appointed day when he is due to give up his kingship, he could take nothing with him. And although it wasn't the jewels or the soft sheets or the fine furnishings or the good food, the thing that he would miss most would be his beloved queen. But he was a clever man. He had learnt all those skipping out of of scholarly classes. All those excuses had honed his brain until his wit was as fleet as his foot. Nothing? I can take nothing with me? No. But, he said, there is nothing to stop me sending anything there now. And the vizier began to smile and said, nothing whatsoever, your majesty. And so he sent corn and crops, trees and fruit, stone for buildings and sheep and cattle. He sent his finest servants with orders. And on the appointed day, well, King Bekir gave up his crown and was rowed out to the island by none other than the vizier himself. And he stepped off that island, and there was a kingdom ruled over by his very wise queen. And the subjects, all of those other kings that had been starving before the crops had arrived because they hadn't had the foresight to send anything ahead, there they were his most loyal subjects. And King Bekir, well, he did not wish to be called King Bekir. He just became known as Bekir the Earnest. And Bekir the Earnest and his wife, well, they were the people that people would go to answer a question. And it is said that the vizier never got back in that boat and never rowed back to the other kingdom, for he found life with Bekir and his queen far more to his liking. And that's the eighth story, the eighth night of Hanukkah. And I'm thinking maybe I will do some for Purim. And maybe I won't, because Purim is a mischievous festival.